Welcome back, readers and romance seekers, to Hopelessly Romantic Behind the Page. Thank you so much for joining me today to reflect once more on a blues singer to redeem him. It was certainly a very interesting choice, wasn't it? I was almost surprised myself that I went ahead and pulled it off the shelf. So, like I mentioned, the book stood out to me because the couple was not like one I've seen yet in Harlequin, at least for as long as I've been doing this. The couple is a mixed race couple, which I feel is just really just unusual. You don't really see a lot of that in general media, let alone these romance novels. So when we take that and put it into the context of a historical novel, it almost feels like a loaded question if we look into the history of white men getting into relationships with women of color. It's also a very loaded question when the reverse is true with a man of color getting with a white woman. That is a different ballgame. We'll get to that one. So socially and politically speaking, white women becoming involved with men of color, it's really long been a very fraught topic. So the book, A Blues Singer to Redeem Him, begins with the Tulsa Race Massacre. And that was started when a black man was alleged to have assaulted a white woman and a mob had attempted to lynch the accused. Lynch mobs are their own particular horror. They are still really recent in American history. But for that, just to keep going, moving through with this one, I'm not going to theorize about whether or not the charges against the young man were legitimate or make the argument that they were falsified. I'm just talking about the inciting incident that launched the violence. I have my own opinions based on what I know extrapolated from American history, but if you want to know more about the case, I really encourage you to do some research. Start with the sources that you might find on Wikipedia. They've got a lot of really good information. And I can go on and on and on about the laws that were enacted to prevent men of any race mingling with white women. And I certainly can go about the social structure that encouraged these changes. I mean, the marriage between the races was technically not federally protected until the Loving versus Virginia case, and that was in the last century. But I'm not going to go further into that. I want to talk about it real quick because I found it really interesting that the book featured a woman of color meeting up with a quote-unquote almost white man. It almost kind of feels like a safe choice. So I know that I reference Lindsay Ellis a lot, and I'm going to go ahead and do it again. She had this really interesting video essay that surrounds the concept of the monster boyfriend. In her essay, she argues that the fears of society changed the particular trope of the monster boyfriend. She references a very old and famous film, Birth of a Nation, where a white woman is chased by a black man, portrayed in blackface, mind you, and instead of allowing her to be assaulted by him, she basically kills herself and throws herself off the cliff. And it's a bit of a dark moment in cinematic history. I know they're like, oh, it's the very first feature film, but I think there are other reasons we should look at it other than that, including how society was portraying these kinds of relationships, at least to the white audience. She also discussed how American society felt a need to protect white women from non-white partners. I really, really do recommend that you check this out. It's got a long history, basically. She talks about not just white with black relationships. She also talks about, like, you know, the influence of communism and how that infected American fears. We have allowed a lot of our fears, a lot of our societal concerns to basically inject themselves into our popular media. And I really, really think that we need to be aware of how media portrays certain things. I could go off on a complete tangent because the way people of other races are portrayed in modern media today have a very, very long and racist history of having been portrayed and basically shown, it's like, this is why they're bad, guys. Don't mingle. Protect the white ladies. So it's a lot. Yeah, it's a lot. And so when I look at the Harlequin lineup, it is so very, very white, at least when looking at the selections that they put out in the bookstores. Aside from Evelyn from our last book, all of our heroines have been white. Looking back at what we've done, we have had Regency England, a theoretically imposed white image that we have of that. We have a Colorado high society family. We have cowboys in Montana. We have just in European-centric story so far. Even the present series with their faraway kingdoms that don't always exist, you know, they're still white European nations. It's I would say for our heroes, we haven't found a hero with a complexion darker than a lightly toasted marshmallow. And most of that's in the present series. And don't get me started on the race question in the present series. I've already gone on enough about that nonsense with their Greeks and their sheiks. I'm just going to say it's weird. So I'm not going to talk more about that. There is an imprint from Harlequin that I haven't gotten to yet, Harlequin Desire. And from what I've gathered by looking at the lineup on the website, it's the most diverse out of all of the imprints that I've noticed, mostly with Black couples, though they're not mixed race, I would say. Having said that, from the looks of things, the Desire imprints seem to focus on the American elite, according to its tagline. So that's kind of interesting to me. I'm not sure why I haven't gotten to this imprint yet. Maybe nothing stood out to me yet from that series when I perused the stacks, as it were. Harlequin does feature stories written by Black authors and for the Black audience, but I feel like their general audience, looking at the majority of their works, it's all white women. I just feel like a lot of it is straight, heterosexual, white women. And I would like to see that change. I've talked a little bit before about how Harlequin is probably one of the biggest, most well-known publishers written by women, written for women. And just because it's romance doesn't mean that's a bad thing. I mean, your boyfriend's going to drag you out to like the 18th iteration of Fast and the Furious, and nobody thinks those are garbage. Everyone's like, oh no, romance, it's terrible. Because, I don't know, it's like something feminine is inherently bad, but we let, you know, masculine nonsense go by the wayside. It's like, sure, who cares? Where was I going with this? But like I was saying, I really think that we need to open up the horizons. It's great that Harlequin features authors, Black authors, on their website with Black stories, but I would like to, one, see more stories with other demographics involved. Where are the Asian stories? Where are the Latin stories? There's a wealth of a world out there. It's not just us Americans and white Europeans who are falling in love and getting into steamy romances. And I'd also like to get to the point where we don't have to like have special categories for these types of romances. You know, I would like to be able to go into Harlequin and see a huge, diverse selection just on their new releases page. They do, like I said, they do have a special, you know, Black author section. But at one point, I would like to have enough interest and enough demographic change where we don't have to go looking for them. They're already there. That's why people are pushing for more diverse representation in mainstream media. It's not just white people. White people are a minority on this planet. It should not just be our stories. It's a lot. A Blue Singer to Redeem Him really, really challenged me. I feel like, because it is a story that focuses on diversity. And right now, I think it's important to elevate these authors, the authors of color. And as much as I would love to see that perfect utopia of every diversity imagined getting top billing no matter what, we're not there yet. We have to elevate the voices we're not hearing. And when I'm really thinking about it, sitting here in my white privilege, this entire conversation is a giant minefield. So I'm going to wander away from it for now before I step into anything crazy. Just when it comes to race relations and perceptions in America, please go seek out voices from people of color. Don't just listen to my white girl stupidity. So let's go ahead and go into a completely different direction. I have actually been thinking on my rating system lately and whether or not it actually means anything. You know that show Whose Line Is It Anyway, where everything's made up and the points don't matter? I think my rating system's a little bit like that. Let me explain. We all know that I touch on certain categories in the story. I look at the cover. Is the cover nice? The romance, does it feel authentic? Were the scenarios realistic? Something that I can imagine actually happening? What are the drama levels that we're dealing with? You know, that kind of thing. I'm thinking about maybe adding a spicy level, as in, what was the sex like? I can't decide if I want to lean more into the sexy stuff when it comes into these books. I do want to try to keep everything as PG-13 at the most, as much as I can. But, you know, adults are getting together, sex is going to happen. When I started this podcast, I thought sex was going to be all over the place. Way back at the beginning, before we were hopelessly romantic, I was like, I'm expecting sex every other chapter. I am expecting nonsense in closets and bedrooms. I was getting ready for it. But compared to my expectations, the books are practically chaste. I think I want to add a spicy level, or maybe a humidity level. Talk about sexual tension. How sexy was it? Did the sex feel normal? No, not that word. That's a bad word. Did the sex feel, I guess, like romance, authentic? Did it feel like it was stumbling around, I guess? Did certain passages meet up with other ways things are described? That kind of thing. Are they creative with how they get into it? You know, I really think I want to evaluate that a little bit more in future podcasts. And that was a tangent. But so also, especially considering a blues singer to redeem him, I really wanted to point out that my scores for the individual categories do not necessarily add up to the final score I place on the book. Like, let's take the drama score real quick. She Dreamed of a Cowboy was not dramatic at all. There was tension. I wouldn't call it drama. So even though I rated that book highly, it got a low drama score. Or when we look at something like A Wolf in Duke's Clothing, the realism score doesn't necessarily apply because these people are werewolves. They're shifters. Realism is kind of out the window here. And that got a high rating as well. It's on my gold star shelf, actually. So it's really all judged individually. These little tiny moments. It will play a part in my final thoughts. But I'm also trying to take my personal tastes out of that scoring process for the final score, just because I think it's terrible. As far as my tastes go, it doesn't mean that it's not a good representation of a romance novel. So what I'm trying to say, I suppose, is that the story in A Blues Singer to Redeem Him, it's not really my cup of tea. It's not a book that I would have sought out on my own in the bookstore. Like most of these romance books, like I've said, I go straight for the fantasy and science fiction section when I look for a new read. And given a choice between, let's say, a paranormal romance and a historical romance, I'm gonna go for the werewolf. So just because it's not in my personal taste doesn't mean it doesn't deserve a high score. So when I'm thinking about these things, when I'm thinking about these scores, I'm trying to think of the bare bones of the novel. Was it constructed well? Was the dialogue smooth? Did characters act appropriately for their setting and personalities? How well was the premise executed? Things like that. Just because I don't like the book doesn't mean it's not a good book. So when I'm looking at A Blues Singer to Redeem Him, I saw the obvious message that the author was trying to convey to us as a reader. So I had to ask myself, did the author achieve her goal? And my end opinion was, yes, she absolutely did. I desperately want more stories with diversity. You heard me harp on it. Not just in the character makeup, but in setting as well. All the historical novels, most of them are no younger than Regency for the most part. I don't always expect Roaring Twenties to be placed in a romance novel. Back when I was in college and getting my literature/writing degree, we talked about the 20s as like almost this complete debauchery and a release of formal values. There are some arguments that, you know, you're letting go of God in a way. It's just an absolute rager of a party. So it's not something that I would consider in a romance, but here it works. So that's why I gave it the gold star rating. It did its job well, in my opinion, and I want more of its kind to make it in popular media. So I want to elevate it. I want to talk about it. I want to tell you about it. And that's really where it is. So on the note of things that I want to read, what have I been reading this week? Well, this is almost embarrassing. I'm not going to say that I'm not reading something. It's just I haven't been reading a lot. I have actually been listening to a lot of podcasts lately. My husband and I have been listening to Morbid, a podcast that just focuses on true crime, and I have been transfixed with those. I also listened to a podcast called The Last Podcast on the Left. I'm sure more people know about it than I'm saying. And they did a series on lobotomies, like the history of lobotomy. I think they do true crime as well, but they did history into like one of the craziest medical things that we have ever done. It was horrifying to listen to and probably quite appropriate for the spoopy season coming up. So that's where a lot of my attention's been, but I knew I wanted to read something. And it's been a little bit of a challenge because a lot of what I want to read is just not available. So let me start over. It's been a little bit complicated. Right now I am reading, another Mercedes Lackey book. I know. And it is one that I have already read before. It's called Exile's Honor. And it's a story based in the Kingdom of Valdemar. You've heard me talk about it from the Arrows of the Queen trilogy. It probably doesn't help, so why I got stuck on this book again. It doesn't help that all of the books that I want to read are either on hold or straight up unavailable in my library app. And because I listen to audiobooks almost exclusively, I kind of nerf myself looking for new reads. I've been wanting to read Andy Weir books lately. The Martian is a longtime favorite of mine, and I really want to read Project Hail Mary, so hopefully my library puts it into their digital collection soon. So back to Exile's Honor. I want to say that this book and its subsequent sequel are a little bit more philosophical than the Arrows trilogy. The Arrows trilogy focuses around Talia. It's a coming-of-age story for her. She's learning how to be the Queen's Own, and it's a lot more politically motivated, and there's quite a bit of action, especially in the third book. So there is some action in Exile's Honor, but the main focus is on Albrecht. He is a former captain of the Carsey army, and he has been chosen to be a herald, one of those very special warriors and helpers for the kingdom who ride these white horses called companions. And he is going to be a herald, except Carsey and Valdemar are violent enemies, and they've just got a brand new herald who comes straight from the ranks of the Carsey army. So it's interesting. There's a lot of soul-searching on Albrecht's end, and definitely a lot of preconceptions challenged on the herald's end. We've actually met Albrecht in the Arrows trilogy as the weapons master. He teaches Talia how to protect herself. It's a great look into his backstory and how he got to where he was. I really, 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 really enjoy prequels that focus on this sort of thing. My dogs are pawing at the chair. What I really find interesting is one of Albrecht's internal conflicts. His religion from Carsey. So Carsey is basically, I guess you call it a theocracy. It's basically run by the religion of the one, or I guess the god of the sun god. It has different epithets. Vikanda Sun Lord, I think, is the really big one. And all of the people who follow the religion in the regular populace, they're pretty much scared of the upper groups of the clergy. They're all politically motivated and corrupted, and they use the powers to be to commit horrible atrocities. They do it to both the people in Carsey and outside of Carsey. So poor Albrecht is kind of stuck in the middle here. He has something called foresight. The priests in Carsey believe that anything of the sort is a witch power and deserves to be basically cleansed by fire. You can probably figure out what that means. And Albrecht gets found out, so they're basically going to burn him at the stake, pretty much. And so now he was rescued. That's the beginning of the story. He was rescued by a companion who becomes his companion. And he really just has this moment of complete realignment of how the religion was twisted to be what it was inside of Carsey. And it's almost a poignant message, don't you think? It's like, how terrible of an idea it is to blindly follow authority just because they tell you they've got God on their side. It's a bad idea, I think. And when I really think about the story, about how it's written and how I feel about the story, I think it would be a really, really good movie, or at the very least, a short series. I would watch an entire season of Albrecht learning how to be the weapons master, about how to be a herald, and how he comes into his own. Really, we're going to shake ourselves. I should take the collars off. Enjoy the little interlude there. But I would love to see this in a visual format, not just because I like horses. Who gave you that idea? I think this would really fit well to a visual format. The book also does a really good job of showing that Valdemar is not infallible. It might be really easy to make the mistake that Valdemar is perfect because they have these companions with them. Like they're practically like angels or derived thereof. But it's good to see that, like any kingdom or any country, it has its own problems with corruption in the noble class, and it's got its own problems of making sure the kingdom goes on the way it needs to. So even though that Exile's Honor is a reread for me, I am thoroughly enjoying it. So, and I will also recommend that you give it a look. So with that, I think that'll be it for today, everyone. Thank you for sticking with me through my rambles. I feel like I was a little all over the place today. And also for sticking through the dog shakes. Maybe next time I'll let them give a little bork or two to add to the podcast. I really hope to see you again next week when we read A Firefighter's Ultimate Duty by Beverly Long here on Hopelessly Romantic. If you like the show, you can visit us at hopelesslyromanticpodcast.com. And if you want to say hi or you have any questions about the show, you can email us at contact@hopelesslyromanticpodcast.com. The show is written and produced by me, Heather Songster. Our technical advisor is Kwang Hyun Cho. And Hopelessly Romantic is an H with K production. And remember, it doesn't matter what you read, only that it's what you love.